Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 126 for November 10th, 2011.
Revenge! Revenge!
Watch Auto Line After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Auto Line After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Thanks for joining us again, folks, for Auto Line After Hours. Peter, good having you here again, too.
Johnny, the DC-3 just cut off.
That's right. We had the furnace going full blast here. It's cold!
Yeah.
What the heck, man? It
was... Unfortunately, there was the first sighting of snow around here today.
Way up here, up north. Hey, I've been dying to ask you. I don't know if you saw what we ran on Auto Line Daily today of this Australian version of...
Oh, that's hilarious.
So we got to explain it in case anybody hadn't heard, because very well-known Chevrolet ad in the United States.
Yeah, baseball hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
Campbell Ewald ad, right?
Yeah, one of the most famous Chevrolet
and
campaigns.
You know, every American who lived then will remember that tagline. It just caught on somehow.
The song was key.
Right. And so it turns out, thanks to Eric Tripco, you know, who we all know on the show here, sent me that link to that YouTube that the Aussies picked it up.
Holden
had.
I had heard of it before, but, you know.
Anyway, they translated it into football. Now, they're talking about not soccer and not American football,
but Australian rules
football. So they say, we love football meat pies, kangaroos, and Holden cars. So you had heard about this before?
Yeah. But to see it is just, like, shocking.
Wait, Ben, do we have that clip? Can we bring that up and play?
Australia, what's your favorite sport?
Football.
Snack?
Pies.
Animal?
Kangaroos.
And what's your favorite car, Australia?
Holden.
Let me see, that's football, meat pies, kangaroos, and Holden cars, huh?
Right.
Well, you sure sound like Australia to me.
We are.
Well, then you better tell me again, because I just might forget.
We love football, meat pies, kangaroos, and Holden cars. Football, meat pies, kangaroos, and Holden cars.
That's football, meat pies, kangaroos, and Holden cars.
Football and meat pies, kangaroos, and Holden cars.
I think you better tell me again.
We love football, meat pies,
it's just like the, you know,
in case you're wondering, this film is brought to you by
the same way that they did it
in
the U.S.
Right.
With the announcer talking, you know, what do we like? We like baseball, you know.
Yeah. So, but you had heard about this ad then, had you?
Yeah. Well, I was at Campbell Ewald for almost 10 years, so we heard all the old stories, too.
But have you ever heard of ads getting recycled like that elsewhere in the world?
It's happened before, yeah. But, can I name them? No, but I know it's happened before. It's been used in other countries, different versions. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Coca-Cola did it, of course. You know,
right.
We like to teach the world to sing. That was translated all over.
Right. No, that's a great example, but I didn't know of an automobile example.
Yeah, I think that's the leading example of that.
My jaw dropped when I saw that thing come on YouTube. Man.
And the way it's shot, in period, it's really kind of cool.
That's great. Hey, the other big news this week, GM and Toyota posted their earnings for the third quarter. I was not very impressed with the GM numbers. It, from this standpoint, they made $1.7 billion net profit. That's very impressive compared to where they were just a few years ago. But big problems in Europe. huge drop off in profits, 30% drop in Asia.
Yeah, that's
A loss in South America. And not that big of an increase in North America. Thank God that carried the day for them. But I see trouble signs here.
Yeah, well, so does Dan Akerson. He said it was unacceptable. But if Dan were sitting here today, I'd say, do you know how many GM CEOs have said that is unacceptable in the last 40 years? But who would have thunk that the North American market would carry the day for GM? Because, well, people forget that the bankruptcy wiped out, a lot of the reasons why GM couldn't make money in North America. And
got rid of most of the debt.
Yeah.
Got rid of an overly high UAW contract, overly high cost UAW contract.
Rearranged the pensions and all that stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, if it wasn't for North America, you couldn't say that 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
GM. If it wasn't for North America, the analysts weighed in. They weren't real thrilled with it either. The stock took a beating. And as for Toyota, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they...
Big drop.
I mean, yeah, the tsunami and everything else. But they're in a dead spin. I mean, they are really, really reeling on the ropes. And it's just not good.
No, it's not. It's...
The entire Japanese automobile industry, I think, is in jeopardy.
They're in a lot of trouble, and it's because of the strength of the yen.
Yeah.
And that's going to be very hard to overcome. But, having said that, I remember for a good part of the early part of my career, the yen was 220 to the dollar. And it was the Americans screaming about how bad the currency exchange was.
Well, the Japanese government, even though they vehemently deny it, have always manipulated the yen.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think they've laid off of late, and they're going to have to get back into it because their industry. And their industry also got together. There's a weird taxation formula when people buy cars in Japan, and they just get hosed. And the industry is...
Well, the whole system in Japan is literally geared for you not to hold on to a car very long. 7 years, and actually, I know at one point it was, if you had a car 5 years, trying to keep up with all the inspections and everything else and taxation that you had to do, you wanted to get rid of a car in 5 years. It was actually more affordable to buy a new car, and that was deliberate tax policy on the part of the government to spur car sales there.
We just call it planned obsolescence.
We didn't need taxes. Yeah. We had rust on our side.
Yeah, we don't need no stinking taxes. Our cars just started.
That's right. The other thing I find interesting is I see more and more reports coming out of China warning of overcapacity there. And I talk to people in the industry, and they go, no, because, the tier... two and tier three cities are just coming on, and you look at the growth there, and it's going to drive all this stuff. But I still think the guys that are warning about overcapacity have got it right.
Well, yeah, because a lot of the new drivers will only be able to afford the really fundamental micro transportation. And, they're all gearing up to build, more luxury crossovers and stuff. So I think they're going to be fighting that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Oh, we're getting behind. We're getting ahead. They're rarely going to hit the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be in constant flux, I think.
Right. But, maybe they'll manage it pretty well. But typically in markets that have been roaring forward, everybody, jumps in head first. And...
And beat it to death, and then all of a sudden everything slows down and says, oops,
yeah.
We might have a little too much capacity here.
Yeah, but it's just interesting to me to hear more and more warnings coming out about that. I think it's worth watching that trend.
Absolutely.
Other thing I thought was interesting, Ward's had a good story about Lexus is going to drop one of their hybrids, the HS250H.
Well, they should drop the name, first of all.
Really, it's one of the H's. That's like that old magazine line of the Department of redundancy department.
Yeah. I think Lexus is in trouble. I mean, they've with Toyota losing their way, Lexus is sort of, they're not the hot thing, you know, and there's too many choices now.
Well, you know, they're still hurt by inventory. Let's see what happens when they get the inventory back. But, yeah, I think you're right. It's they're probably not going to get it all back to where they just were not too long ago.
No, I don't think they will. You know, really, the emergence of Audi has probably killed Lexus a lot more than people think.
Mm.
That's what I think. And by the way, getting back to this GM thing, our pal David Welch did a huge story for Bloomberg on it.
On GM.
Yeah, it was typical David, thorough and detailed. Mm-hmm. And after reading it, you knew as much as Dan Ackerson did about this. But, yeah, not to jump back and forth, but
yeah,
I think Lexus is just, you know, it's just not the thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Just showing up and doing cars that are sort of, you know, more blantastic than their regular blantastic cars, and they never break, and, oh, it's such a, the whole thing about the unique service experience. Oh, I can get my nails done at the Lexus dealer. It's just like, you know, people are over that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, so what? I just want my car to run. I want to drop it off when it's fixed. Please let me know.
And more than that, I mean, I would say Audi's got more of a presence right now.
Oh, yeah, Audi's presence in the market is it's spectacular, really.
It's amazing to see how it's really starting to catch on, and this is not an overnight thing. They've been working at it a long time, and that's why you've got to really admire VW AG for taking a real long-term look and spending the right kind of money to get it right. And now they're really reaping the rewards. They're making a lot of money off Audi.
Yeah, well, and it's amazing, and we've talked about this, how much Volkswagen has been able to be successful at not only juggling all their divisional balls and keeping them in the air, but giving them real separation mm-hmm. in the market.
Right.
And it's tough.
Right.
You know, it could go off the rails at any moment. But right now it's...
Well, you know, because they have a plan to be number one, and then that starts to become the driver. Are you hitting the target so we can hit our target, blah, 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 rather than focus on the brands. I mean, I know they are brand focused, and they do a brilliant job of it, but, you know, hell, it may not matter at all. I think they're going to hit the goal this year. I mean, they're going to come awfully close to catching GM in vehicle sales, and they're already beating GM in revenue and profits. And at the end of the day, I think that's the better measure.
Yeah, because they do tend to pour a lot into R&D.
Yeah.
So.
Well, hey, you know, let's take a break right here.
Okay.
Because, Ben, at this point, we'd like to thank our good friends at Bridgestone.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again, and promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
Well, what else, Peter? What else you been up to?
I'm worried about the Lions on Sunday. They're going to Chicago. They've been off for a week. Chicago's just decided to get hot, so it's going to be a classic battle.
Oh, they're going to beat them.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it.
What else? You had something else on your Autoline Daily today. Oh, cool. Seamus is talking about the Camry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how that does. Camry had a good, strong month last month, but that's pretty much clearing out the old stuff. The new one's not filling up the pipelines quite yet, but...
You know, it's a different mindset for Toyota dealers. Before, they used to just sit there and take orders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people come in, oh, yeah, sure, we'll get that for you. Now it's like they're scrambling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, the inventory's been affected and everyone... Oh, well, when the inventory's back up, it's just going to, we're going to get right back. And I don't think it's going to be that way.
No, I don't think it's going to be that easy for them. It's going to be awfully tough for them to regain all their market share back. I have no question they will gain market share back. They will increase their sales, but.
Yeah, they will.
It's but point.
I think Lexus is probably in more trouble than people think.
Well, you know, I think you're onto something. It is kind of bland. They could fix that, but you know, Toyota's just not known for its styling, or at least not to my eye.
Well, they've got the new Lexus, which they're touting with the cheese grater front end or whatever that thing is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know if that's going to be enough, or if it's going to be people aren't going to warm up to that face on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to wait until I see it on the road.
I like it because I think it's different, and there's I think they've really got something there, but it just seems to be the front end, and I'm not sure that they've got the holistic design to a car down yet. That's really bold and daring.
Yeah, I think you're right. It just looks like they bolted a front clip on it and called it good.
Right.
So how about Tony Stewart winning again and now 3 points behind Carl Edwards with two races?
Four out of eight races? Isn't that what he's won now?
That's
unheard of.
And so it's going to be interesting. Carl Edwards really needs a win in Phoenix. He needs a win bad. He needs to win one of the last two, or I think Tony's going to blow by him.
But, you know, this is actually pretty good racing because, you know, you had the guy, you know, really fighting to get back into the championship, winning his fourth race in it. I mean, it's not like they're fighting, duking it out for 22nd and 24th spot. You know, they're at the front, leading, winning.
Yeah, Carl was second. I mean, Stewart's a notoriously streaky driver.
True, right.
So when he gets his mojo going, he can reel off a series of wins. So that's interesting. And then Kyle Busch got parked.
Right.
And that's not over yet. There's a lot of... Now... his Nationwide sponsor has requested that Denny Hamlin be in the Nationwide car for the last two races.
And explain, you know, for any of those who don't know what Kyle did.
Kyle Busch, Kurt's younger brother, who I think is the most talented driver in NASCAR, and I don't think many people would disagree within the NASCAR community. He has always battled his, I don't know, he's kind of a hothead.
Right.
Not that I would know anything about that. But so on a truck race, I mean, he got into it with Ron Hornaday under Green Racing, and he felt Ron Hornaday was totally out of line and moving him up and just, you know, messing him up. So he just lost it, and it was on.
Hornaday's the points leader in.
Yeah, he just lost it, and so Kyle just drove him into the wall on the yellow. You know, it's Hornaday could have been hurt. Kyle could have been hurt. I mean, you just can't do it. You just cannot do it. And NASCAR didn't hesitate. They parked Kyle,
mm-hmm.
and they parked him for the weekend. In other words, that was a truck race on Friday. He couldn't race a Nationwide or Sprint Cup. It's embarrassing to Joe Gibbs Racing. His M&M sponsors aren't happy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean... What's Joe Gibbs going to do? He's not going to, I mean, he's going to try to make this work because he doesn't want Kyle going anywhere.
Right. Well, Kyle probably learned a lesson, and I thought it was very telling. He sat in the race, in the pit box, not in the beautiful motorhome or even not even at the track. No, he was in the pit box the whole time.
Yeah, and he watched the journeyman guy who filled in for him pound around in 35th place. And
Looked like his car was in reverse.
Well, his team relies on Kyle's suspension setups.
Oh.
And so that hurt the team. And so it's a mess.
Well, you know, that's probably true. If you're not driving absolutely flat out at the ragged edge, you know, the car's not going to work for somebody. And it'd be hard to emulate Kyle's style.
Yeah, because he's, like I said, terrifically talented guy. So I think it'll shake out fine. But M&M's is kind of they could go sideways and try to muscle Joe to, you know, Kyle doesn't reflect everybody. What is your brand exactly? M&M's, okay? Get over yourself. They're good to eat. Should we eat them a lot? No, but they're good. So get over yourselves, M&M's, really. sit Kyle down, you know, admonish him, beat him up a little, but don't screw it up.
That's good. Hey, we've got a guest to bring on. It's probably a good
Randy
time
Kilowatt.
To do that. Right. Yeah. We've got Chris Payne, who's the director of the movie Revenge of the Electric Car. And you may also know that he did a movie called Who Killed the Electric Car? And we got a chance to talk with the man right now. Chris, can you hear me? Because we're Skyping him in for those who are just listening right now. But
how are you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Yes, we can.
Oh, great.
How's the new movie going?
I've been enjoying listening to your show so far.
Oh, good.
Oh, terrific.
How's the new movie going?
Movie's going well. We opened this weekend in Chicago, Detroit, Ann Arbor, Seattle, and then back in Los Angeles again. So that's pretty good for a documentary.
So, no kidding. Chris, let me... So you did the original movie about Who Killed the Electric Car, which was about the GM's first foray into making electric vehicle with the EV1, correct?
Yeah. And but, you know, it's funny because GM gets so much flack for that, and partly because they just happen to provide the best footage. All the car companies were involved in...
That's pretty good.
It wasn't just they crushed cars, so did Honda, so did Toyota, so did Nissan, so did Ford. All the car companies were after these little electrics at the end of the 90s. So GM was sort of the poster child for it because they probably developed the best car at the time, and also because they led the lawsuit against California. So they were a natural target.
Yeah, and I had a good friend of mine had one, and he didn't want to give it up, but you know, yeah. We live in, people don't understand, but we live in such a litigious society now that the reason they want them back and crush them because they can't, the basic premise is they couldn't keep them going or warrant them, or they couldn't be sure that people were going to be okay with these vehicles. Is that correct?
Well, that's what they claim, and you're certainly right. The legal part of it is definitely true, because if they sold the cars and they were then they'd have to make parts available for 10 years for these automobiles, and they didn't want to do that. And you know, our beef with it wasn't just that it was a particular car, it was a whole generation of cars that we really needed to get a start on, and instead of like moving forward incrementally, they just abandoned ship. And so we thought it deserved a movie.
Well, John and I have talked, we've talked about this a lot. Could you imagine if GM never stopped developing electric vehicles after the EV1, I mean, they would be so far ahead of the Prius now or whatever we're touting as the right. greatest thing since sliced bread, which is obviously the new Volt, which I think is the most elegant solution and will be for a long time to come.
Mm-hmm. It's a terrific car. And Dan Neal had that funny comment that, you know, who would expect that an engineering team with bad haircuts from the Midwest would out-engineer Mercedes and BMW? And so, I don't know, maybe that's a cheap shot on haircuts, but...
So your original movie was, you know, people, you're right, people took away GM bad in the original movie, right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
The new movie, you really dove into the work that went into the Volt and the achievement that the Volt is that correct? Because I haven't seen the new movie.
Yeah, the Volt is one of four different programs that we follow over 3 or 4 years. And it was certainly the one that was the most surprising to get access to after having made the first film, because we had some people at GM that weren't really thrilled with us as filmmakers. But I think that most people understood that even though we had a point of view in the first film, we tried to be fair-minded about it. You know, if you look at the end of the first film, we didn't even blame General Motors directly. We talked about consumer apathy for new products at the time. We talked about the oil industry's involvement, and there are lots of factors in those programs. So Bob Lutz and his team there decided to, after going back and forth a few times, to let us in to follow the Volt program. So it was very interesting.
So you've driven all these cars, have you? Or what do you make of them, especially as to can they really catch on in the marketplace?
Well, I think the speed of them catching on has a lot to do with oil prices. And one reason that the Prius finally did so well after languishing in the marketplace for years was that, as you well know, the gas prices hit $4 a gallon in 2008, and they were like the only car standing there that could get really good mileage. So suddenly people went, oh, I'm going to try a Prius. And I think that's the same thing with this generation of plug-in cars. For the mass market, it's going to be oil prices that drive it.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you, but I just wonder if, you know, the vehicles themselves are really going to catch on with the public, because the Prius does well, but other hybrids don't do that well.
Well, I mean, nothing beats, in my view, electric motors for propulsion. It's just, even in the, you know, the latest Porsches coming out of Germany right now, where they're using flywheels or some of the prototype hydrogen fuel cells, any of these vehicles where you're putting electric motors up front in terms of how you propel that vehicle, you're getting incredible performance as a vehicle. And I think finally now what we have a generation that will be actually able to go out and buy these cars and say, oh, I get it. And they won't be because they like Al Gore or they're worried about Saudi Arabia. It'll be because they like the car. And that's going to be a lot bigger than just a Prius, for example.
No, that's a good point. You can get terrific performance with electric, and you can also do some real interesting things from how you build the architecture of a car. Especially if you can get to hub motors, that would be really change how you can architecture out a car.
Yeah, I saw on the Model S, I went on a tour of their plant a couple months ago, or I guess about a month ago, and it looks like the Model S, has the motor sitting right by the rear wheel. Is that what you mean by a hub motor?
Built into the hub of the wheel.
Oh, yeah, I see. So, oh, yeah, of course. And there's a lot of bicycles that are doing that already.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, on an automotive size, it's got to be a fairly hefty motor. It's really heavy, so a lot of unsprung weight, and it affects the handling of the car. So, get there, I think.
Oh, for sure. And in the Model S, again, you'll see that, like you're talking about, since the batteries are all down below, your motors are in the back of the car. You now have the entire the entire hood compartment that's available for anything. It makes a huge crumple zone for safety. You can do luggage up there. It really does transform what an automobile can be, at least aesthetically.
I guess Ferdinand Porsche figured that out with the Beetle back in 1938.
That's right.
Well, Porsche had an electric vehicle as well, didn't he? I remember a famous early Porsche.
Loner.
Was that it?
Loner Porsche. It's like LOHNER. I believe that's how it's spelled. But you're right. It's like the first four or five vehicles that he designed. And this is very early on. We're talking like 1901. Were electrics, essentially. It's like the Volt.
Yeah.
Range extended electric vehicle. It's unreal.
But, we've talked about this, Chris. I mean, we're still talking niche vehicles here for the most part, because I think ultimately, in some urban areas, you can get by with pure electrics. Absolutely. If you're congested, short trips, blah, blah, blah. With Volt, you can take longer trips. But until you can go somewhere, plug in your car for 3 to 5 minutes like you do when you fill up your car with gasoline, and then drive away for another week, I think electric vehicles will always be niche vehicles.
Well, you have me as a guest on your show, and I would say that it'll transcend niche much faster than many people expect. And one reason is because of things like the Volt, which say, okay, it's just a car with this incredible bonus that you could run it on electricity if you feel like plugging it in your garage overnight. And people go, okay, good, so it's going to be just like my regular car, but it's got this extra thing. Once people have that experience, they'll begin to think, oh, gosh, I can really live on electric. In fact, I even prefer that as a propulsion. And plug-in options will become normal on cars like, 10 years down the road, like fuel injection or ABS, it will become, of course, it's got a plug on it. Because what if gas prices are $6 next week? I want to be able to just to plug it in at $1 a gallon.
I get that. I'm just talking about the, and because I love the Volt, and but I'm talking about the pure electrics, total pure electrics. Until people can go somewhere to a filling station, plug them in like they used to put gas in their car for 3 to 5 minutes and then drive away for a week, I think the pure electrics will always remain a niche.
Well, here's another way to think about it. It's kind of a good discussion here. We've had such a monopoly of one kind of vehicle for 100 years, where the vehicle is something that goes 300 miles on it between fuel before fuelings, or it goes, you know, 5 miles, whatever you want, just one vehicle. I think what's going to happen in the next 50 years is you're really going to have a potpourri of different kinds of vehicles. People will say, no, I'm going to have a rental. I'll have a gas car for big trips, or I'll rent one, or I'll car share with someone. But for my everyday car, I just want a little electric that's going to cost me less money, not going to be hard to fill it up, and I'm going to just zip around town. So these things will begin to come in the market. I think this is what Carlos Ghosn is betting on at Nissan, and begin to play a much bigger niche than we might think of when we hear the word niche. I think that could be like a 10% niche, a 15% niche, as people figure out what it is.
Yeah, in given time, I don't think there's any question about it. It's a matter of how much you commit to believing it's going to happen in the next couple of years or in another decade or two. And, you know, my analogy is to hybrid sales, and hybrids are 2% of the market right now. Mm. You know, can electrics really achieve a whole lot better than that? I think you raise a really good point. The driving experience in an electric is different, and I think it's kind of cool. But are there enough people who are looking for that in a car like me to take it above the kind of market share that hybrids now have?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the fact is that most people haven't had a chance to even check that out for themselves. So this is why it's kind of an exciting moment right now, and while we sort of took the jocular name revenge of the electric car, because now, as of this year, and as more dealers get them, people will be able to go check these things out and go, huh, oh, I get it, or I don't get it, or, you know what, I might do this. And for so many years, electric cars have just been a theory that we could talk about on talk radio. Or I could say, oh, remember the good old days, there was an EV1. This is going to, the next 3 years is going to be this time of trying things out. Kind of like when the horseless carriage came out. People would say, are you sure it's just like a horse? Yes, it's a horseless carriage. It's just like a horse carriage, but it's just without the horse. And over time, it will sink in.
Yeah, we'll see you soon, because like you say, there's going to be a lot of electric cars coming out. I mean, even next year, we're going to see, over the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to see a flood of electric cars.
Let's talk about it. Audi has one. BMW's got that Active E coming on in sort of a limited way. Ford's got their Focus EV coming out this Christmas. I don't know how many they're making of that car, probably low production runs. But almost every car maker in the world is coming to market with something in the next year.
Right.
We need to take another commercial break.
Yeah, we probably should.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that. And hold on there a minute, Chris. We've got to take a commercial break here. And Ben, let's thank our friends at Chevrolet.
Not only does the Chevrolet Cruze offer a ton of features, it features some of the best safety and maintenance in the business. The Cruze comes with rear park assist, which beeps if you're about to back into something. It has rollover mitigation, which means the car senses if it might roll over, and applies the brakes to the outside front tire to bring the car back under control. And it has OnStar vehicle diagnostics, which sends you emails about the latest status of your car. And you can learn a lot more about it at Chevrolet.com/cruise.
Chris, let's go back to your movie a minute. But before we do that, Ben took a little part of the trailer to the movie that we want to run right now. Ben, let's run that clip.
You know, until we see every car on the road being electric, we will not stop.
Oh, Elon's going to lose his shirt. Elon's going to get crushed.
God damn it, we got to get these cars out.
Things keep coming along from people outside the car business. They all fall on their butts.
You didn't get the message. Give us the cars that we want.
I got the flood of emails saying, you sold out to the oil companies and you've killed my grandchildren. I hope you rot in hell.
They have based their whole company strategy on it. If it fails, there might not be a Nissan.
You need to predict the future, prepare for it. If it happens, we'll be ready.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about the premise of the movie. You're following four different people in it. Or you take it from there.
Well, we're following, yeah, exactly. We're following four different kinds of car industry archetypes, if you will, and really industry archetypes. Bob Lutz representing the old guard industry with a huge capitalization that's under a lot of stress. They go bankrupt during our film, as you know. Then we pick up with an outsider like Elon Musk, who made a fortune by selling PayPal to eBay. And he says, Detroit will never figure this out. We've got to do it like we do it here in Silicon Valley. And he runs into a lot more trouble than I think he ever expected. And then Carlos Ghosn, who's half Lebanese, half Brazilian. He ran Michelin for a while. He's the co-CEO of both Renault and Nissan. And this guy is making a huge, huge bet to try to leapfrog Toyota on with plug-in technology. So those are some pretty big archetypal industry players. We play their three-year journey against a local guy. Actually, it's my next-door neighbor who's doing electric vehicle conversions in his garage using existing cars. So we decided not to make an issue movie this time, to make a film about the kinds of people that make change possible and hopefully, you know, reach a larger audience than, you know, the typical political dialogue.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's a great premise for the movie.
Oh, well, so thanks. I hope you get to see it.
So what did... Dan, I know Dan Neal, what did he's got a quote, didn't he make a quote in your movie about electric cars in general? And I don't recall what it was, but.
Yeah, just, you know, up front he says, and this is when we decided to use with Dan, he goes, you know, he's been driving cars all his life. He's a big petrol head. He loves gasoline horsepower. But he's made a decision that he'll never buy a gasoline-powered car again. The future is electric. And so for Dan to say that, I know he's, you know, inclined to, you know, big statements sometimes. But I think on another level, Dan's deeply impressed, and he sees that this is a really interesting future for everybody, not just folks in the political debate.
Well, yeah, but I really, at the end of the day, I think that we will have a kaleidoscope of power, of propulsion going on in this country. We have to. There's no way we're going to see fully electric semi-tractor trailers running across the U.S. No, we're going to have a smorgasbord of propulsion choices, and among those will be pure electrics, hybrids, you know, plug-in hybrids, internal combustion engines. You know, it's just... We have to. That's the only thing that's going to really work for the vastness of what we're dealing with in the U.S.
And I completely agree. I think Daniel would completely agree with that statement. In fact, one of the things that Dan said that was kind of funny, he said, I think one of the reasons people don't like electric cars is that they perceive them as something that liberals will drive. And I don't care what it is. I just don't like it on principle. But if you think of it, you know, the electric drive coming in all kinds of gas vehicles like the Bolt's done, and really, to some extent, even the Synergy drive that Toyota's developed and all these things, it just becomes a bigger part of what the automobile is over time. And we don't necessarily need to be a purist on one side or the other to get the advantage of it.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. And that's why I'm very skeptical as to how well electric cars are going to sell. But I think they're really cool. I mean, I like driving them, and I really like the idea of electric performance and what you can do with the car. I just don't see them catching on, not in this decade. Maybe towards the end of the next decade is what I see. And I hear what you're saying, and you got a great argument that once you experience it, it's a new driving experience, and people are going to want to do that. But I don't think it's going to be in big numbers.
What about the other argument about gasoline? You know, China really kicks in on oil consumption. India kicks in. Peak oil hits, so Saudi Arabia is overstating their numbers. It's just going to drive gasoline prices up. And when electricity is running like a buck a gallon, and you can do it in your garage, I think a lot of Americans will say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to try that because I don't want to pay $6 a gallon to fill up my pickup truck.
I don't disagree. But remember that, you know, for the most part in China especially, the electric cars are essentially coal cars. They're going to be running really on coal. 80% of China's electricity comes from coal. Here in the U.S., you know, it's coal, it's natural gas, or it's nukes. That's like 90% of everything that we do. So, you know, there's still issues connected with the electric car that is both from a health standpoint and from a cost standpoint, because you're right, electricity's cheap now, but if you want to, quote-unquote, clean that electricity up, it's going to cost a lot more money. In addition, there's no way that states are going to let electric cars in the long run get away without paying their fair share of the road tax. So even though the economics are really good right now, I don't think they're going to stay as attractive as things got to get cleaner.
Well, it's funny because you and I could have a debate, and you've got a lot of expertise in the industry, and I've been following this issue for a long time, and that debate could go on for 10 years because it's a long one. And we decided just not to do that debate. But to your point about coal, I think most Americans don't care where their energy comes from. They just want it to be cheap. And it's true that coal is a very bad deal. In fact, it's just as bad as putting crude oil into your car via gasoline. The difference is that coal and electricity are domestic, and that money is not going out of the country. So from a public policy point of view, if you're looking to stimulate your economy, you can keep the energy money in the country. That's a win for everybody.
No, that's a very compelling argument. I totally agree with that.
The other thing that we've been looking at, I tried to put this in the movie, but again, it made it too heavy, was the amount of electricity is required to make a gallon of gasoline. There's something like 4 to 6 kilowatt hours of electricity in every gallon. And it turns out it's more efficient if you just put the electricity right into a battery and went 20 miles than converting crude oil into gasoline to make it go in your car. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about efficiency, suddenly you're going, okay, well, you can make an argument either way, but at the end of the day, it's like, am I having a better experience driving the vehicle?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. Electrics can be really cool to drive. Hey, we got to take one more commercial break right here, and then we got to go to questions from our audience. Hold on there a minute, Chris. And Ben, let's thank our friends at Hyundai.
The sixth generation of the Hyundai Sonata is taking the industry by storm, and no wonder. It offers a fluidic design theme that gives it a strikingly modern, coupe-like exterior design, and yet the interior provides the roominess of a full-size car as measured by the EPA. The Sonata also provides an eco-friendly interior with soy-based foam for the seats. Put it all together with Hyundai's strong reliability and value proposition, and you've got yourself a really compelling package. Check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com.
Okay, Chris, this is the part of the program that we call Rapid Fire, where we just open it up to questions from the audience. And Ben, let's bring up that introduction. Okay, Chris, we've got a number of questions here for you. Dr. Botox wants to know, if the Volt is so great, how come it's not selling with $7,500 cash on the hood?
Okay, well, the reason is that, you know, they've got a brand new vehicle that's not fully amortized like a gas car. So there's a lot of expense in getting car companies to try something different. So you definitely need to have some incentives to bring a new kind of technology to market. I think that's what the federal government was thinking on that rebate. Is that the question?
Well, I would add to what you just said that, you know, so far they've only offered them in seven states. Or something like that, I mean. And they've prohibited dealers from selling all the cars in inventory. They had to keep one demo model. They've just lifted that sort of thing.
So, well, absolutely. You know, they're only making this car in Hamtramck, and you've got to train every mechanic and every GM dealership across the country to deal with these things. So you can't just, like, wave a magic wand and have them suddenly, you know, everywhere for all people.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that, Chris, because aren't you in California?
Yes, I am.
But because the California politicians, they don't get any of that. You know what I'm saying? They don't understand, oh, we'll just snap our fingers and this will all be good. No. You know, you have to train technicians. You have to develop the technology. You have to prove the technology. You have to get dealerships up and running to sell the vehicles. Now, the first year with the Volt, GM had an incredible lease on the vehicle, which was $350 a month. And people didn't realize it right then, but they should have jumped on. If they were thinking of a Volt, that's the time to get a Volt. Because now if you go into a dealer, it's a lot more money if you want to lease one.
Hmm. Yeah. And you know, the last part of that is that it takes people a little while to figure out if it's something they want to try themselves. You can't just expect a consumer to, like, instantly buy something that seems sort of new. You got to give everybody some time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I agree. Do not judge how well the Leaf or the Volt are selling until about year three or four. You know, they're ramping up very slowly. They're not available, but in very limited areas. So you can't judge it based on what's happened so far. Mitch W. wants to ask you, how attractive would today's EVs be to consumers if the price of oil was not subsidized by the United States Navy, protecting the free flow of oil around the world?
Well, I think that the answer to the question is built into the question itself.
Yeah, right.
Gasoline would be a lot more expensive if it wasn't didn't have to be protected by the taxpayer.
Let's see. We've got all kinds of different questions, but we also have some phone calls coming in. Ben, let's bring in the first one.
Hi, this is Jim from Sioux Falls. Say, Chris, thanks a lot for all you do for the green car movement. I have two questions. One, do you think that the federal government should relax its regulations on emissions so that more diesel engines could be used in the United States? And two, should the regulations surrounding crash protection be changed so that more entrepreneurs who can build lightweight commuter-type cars could get into the business? It's just so expensive for anybody else to enter the business because of the stiff regulations with crash protection. It's almost impossible. And just wondering what your thoughts are on those. Thanks. Bye.
Well, two different questions. I mean, and I'm sure that our hosts have some points of view on this too, but you know, regulations are generally fairly controlled by industry and very slow bureaucratic processes that come out of academia and all kinds of political stuff. So the converter and the independent guy is going to be the last guy in line that's going to get a break from the government. It's just, unfortunately, that's the way it is. People that I know that are doing conversions are doing cars that are already standardized, cars that have passed those regulations, and then they have certain kinds of exemptions. And the other question was will you guys remind me again?
Yeah, he wanted to know, should they back off safety regulations? So
that ain't going to happen.
No, no, that's not good either.
I can just tell you that right
now. If you talk to Tesla or a lot of these car companies that are doing pure electrics, they say that there's more built-in safety to electric, so that gives them an advantage. So they probably like the regulations.
Yeah, I mean, it's a barrier to entry. There's no question. Listen, that's a key reason why there are not yet Chinese cars in the American market. They haven't cracked the code on that yet.
Well,
yeah, where's the BYD?
They can't pass the crash test.
Right, right. Let's see here. Eric says, what I think the future of the so-called electric cars will be in 25-plus years is a small battery plug-in, a flywheel, or a capacitor, high power buffer with a small turbine generating, burning any flammable gas or liquid. He wonders, does the general public know how the Volt generally works? He He says, I keep hearing that people think the Prius is more electric than the Volt. So I guess the bottom line is there is a lot of confusion out there in the market.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one reason the car industry kind of moves slowly, because they got to bring everybody to speed. But once you have these cars out there, people can actually drive them, and then they can understand them. You won't understand them just from a TV commercial.
Yeah, good point. Okay, totally different topic here. Prius Toric asks, what does GM lose if Saab bought by the Chinese companies? How does this all work out? This is not well worded.
He's asking why GM is objecting to the Saab deal.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, you know, that technology in the Saab 4X and the Cadillac, the SRX, that's seriously advanced all-wheel drive technology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't blame him for not wanting to just say, oh, yeah, sure, take it.
Yeah.
You know, we only spent however many hundreds of millions of dollars in 8 years developing it. And so, yeah, GM is just saying, no, it's not going to happen. So I don't blame GM for that. I mean, you know, this country's got to wise up when it comes to our manufacturing policies. And, you know, if we're going to continue to let our manufacturing base erode, we're in trouble. So I applaud GM for putting their stake in the ground saying, look, yeah, if you want to buy Saab, that's fine, but we're not giving you the 9-4X.
Yeah.
Just not.
It's why it's great the Volt is being manufactured here, too. It's really a jump in automotive technology. Whatever you think about GM, this is some good engineering, and it's great to have it being made in this country.
Yeah. Oh, it's a superb engineering. And the time frame they achieve that with is it's spectacular.
As the company's going bankrupt.
Yeah,
around them,
I mean,
right.
For what they did with their backs against the wall to bring that car to market was a real achievement.
Okay, DC Auto Geek, who's with us tonight, says last week the House introduced a bill that would repeal all vehicle incentives. And so, Chris, he wants to know, will buyers purchase EVs without subsidies?
Well, when they're doing low production runs and, they've got to pay for their R&D, it's going to be difficult to have them compete one-on-one with gasoline, especially when you have things like, as your other the other writer was saying, when you have gasoline prices subsidized and everything else. The government has a job to lead, and that means steering us in a direction. Doesn't mean they can tell us where we're going, but they should at least head us in the right direction. And a lot of this came out of the Pentagon, which said we've got to save oil for our Navy and our Air Force and not blow it in automobiles. So I think it's appropriate to have these incentives.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got another phone call. Ben, let's bring it in.
Yeah, John Rick from San Diego. Hey, on the GM thing, I think the main problem with GM is they picked the wrong global brand. The real global brand is Buick Opel. It's strong at Buick, strong in China. Opel's strong in Europe. And by the way, it's founded by a German company, which if you do business in Europe, that's an important factor. I do work in the global transportation industry, so I know this for a fact. Buick was also doing pretty well in the U.S. Opel has a great portfolio of products. They're selling well, doing well for them. I think if they would have focused more on Buick Opel initially, 2008, 2009, and so on, they would have done a lot better. At this point, the Chevy brand would have done as well as it did. It had the portfolio already of products in the pipeline already. And I think at the end of right now, you'd be looking at a much stronger GM position. But comments?
Yeah.
Not going to happen. They're all in on Chevrolet and Cadillac.
Right.
And, you know, Buick exists because of China and Opel's there, but they're hell-bent on turning Chevrolet into a global brand.
That's it.
And Cadillac. Cadillac needs to be a global brand, too. So.
What was on that report you guys were talking about earlier about GM, the reporter did? You mentioned it earlier in the show before I was on.
About their earnings? I know we talked about that earlier.
Comprehensive report.
Oh, David
that was
Welch.
Done.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who's a buddy of ours, has been on the show a bunch.
Reporter at Bloomberg, who just did an extensive...
Oh, right.
Just did an extensive...
General Motors.
...analysis of why GM is in precarious position, why they're underperforming in...
It's not the Volt, is it?
No.
Let's see here. Just looking at all the questions we have. Jay Cujo wants to know, with GM making higher profit margins on things like the Cruze and Sonic pickups and large SUVs selling like hotcakes, why is this not reflected in their profits? Surely fleet queens like the Impala and Malibu are not eroding all those profits.
Well, no, we covered that. I mean, they're getting beat up in
Europe. They did fine in North America. I mean, their profits were up. But, yeah, they got clobbered outside of this country, or outside of NAFTA, I should say.
Yeah.
And we've got another phone call here. Ben, let's bring this one in.
Hey, guys. This is Youngblood in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, yeah.
Good evening to you guys. My question's for Mr. Payne. It seems like emerging green technologies has a weak link in the chain, and that weak link appears to be storage. Mainly the batteries, it's holding them back. Where do you think the next breakthrough might be coming from, or is there any hope that we could get a battery that could be 21st century technology and enhance the technology that's going along with wind and solar and EVs? Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks.
Okay, good question. Well, this is why the DOE and everybody else is all chips are in for batteries right now. If, like 10 years ago, all chips were in for hydrogen research. So I think there's a lot of money, not just government money, but VC money flowing into what's the next generation of battery. I would argue that you can do a lot with a lithium battery. It's certainly not going to do your pure electric long-haul vehicle like we were talking about before, but you can already do an incredibly efficient, you know, plug-in hybrid car or a city car with lithium batteries.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Jean Halliday wrote in. She says, hi, guys. Why do you think Lexus is really going to stop selling hybrids? Well, they're dropping a model of hybrid. I don't think they're going to stop selling hybrids at all.
No, they're not going to stop. But as you point out, they're going to drop one model. I think they have too many models.
Mm-hmm.
They have too many models that sort of blended together. And they're not putting some clearly defined hybrids out there. I mean, they're just getting lost in the Lexus shuffle. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that car just never really ever caught on. And, Ben, I think we got another phone call here, do we? Or did we? Was that that was the one, okay, that I had up here. Okay. Let's see. Do we have any others that we should get to here? Okay, what Andrew Charles says, despite the proliferation of 40-mile-per-gallon highway compacts and subcompacts, this year the fastest-growing volume segment last month, and in fact all year, has been large body-on-frame SUVs, large trucks. Are Americans really going to switch to more economical vehicles such as EVs without heavy penalties on fuel use?
I think what will happen, the transition will be... people will have cars for different uses. They will have what they call their whatever long distance car or their visit grandma car, and then they might have a city car. And just like Chris was saying earlier, I mean, I think it's going to be different for different people, but you know, people like buying these big vehicles. And make no mistake, that's where Chrysler and Ford and GM are making all their money now.
Right.
The trucks and the SUVs and the large crossovers. But I just think people, like I've got a reader in Mustang, Oklahoma, who has a CTS-V, a Z06 Corvette, and he and his wife are looking at a Volt. Because he said, and I get it, he said, I'm not giving up the high-performance stuff, but, you know, for a lot of our other uses, we'll consider using the Bolt. That's how the transition's going to play out. It's not going to be...
I totally agree.
Yeah, it's not going to be the government saying, or Northern California politicians saying, okay, we're done here, we're going all electric. It's not going to work that way. And every time our politicians say stuff like that, what little credibility they had goes right out the window. So, Chris, where can we see your movie?
Well, it's opening in Detroit and Ann Arbor tomorrow, I guess, and then Chicago and Seattle, and it's still playing in San Francisco and L.A. and I think in Boston. So, you know, documentaries get a, you know, they're not, there's giant studios behind them, and yeah. they're usually in theater for 1 week. If you don't get a chance to see it in the theater, which I hope people will, because it's kind of fun to see it with other people, I'm sure it will be showing up next year in other formats.
Okay.
That's great to know. You got a website for it, too?
Yeah, it's, thanks for the plug. It's Revenge of the Electric Car. And you can go there, and they'll have all the theaters and keep you up to date with where the film is. I hope people get a chance to see it. You know, whether or not, forget the electric car or not, it's a, obviously that's an issue I care about. But it was fascinating to get into these companies and see what it takes to run up against huge, huge obstacles. So not just because you have $1 billion that you can do whatever you want. It takes a lot of leadership to make change happen.
Not only that, but it's really cool that they would let you in that early. I mean, you got something that most people would never be able to get.
Yeah, and I couldn't get it now, I'm sure.
But, you know, so it, the story is really about these people more than the electric car. Is that it?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, I read a review that said, isn't there supposed to be a scene where someone plugs a car in or drives it somewhere? And no, it's, we figured that stuff is covered in the media enough. And what we wanted to see is like something that people aren't used to seeing.
Well, that's excellent. That's really cool. I definitely want to see the movie. You've really piqued my interest here.
Good. Well, let me know what you think. You can call me up and lambast me if you want.
That's great. Hey, thanks a million for coming on After Hours with Peter and I. It's been terrific having
you. Yeah, great, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having me on.
Cool. That's great. And so we've come to an end of another good show here.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Yeah. That was pretty good. I definitely want to see that movie.
I do. Yeah. But
I will see the movie. And folks, we're going to wrap it up here. Remember that you can always follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/outofline Detroit. Check out our website at justoutofline.tv or follow us at twitter.com/outofline. Go to autoextremist.com. Follow Peter at twitter.com/autoextremist. And you're on Facebook too, right?
Yeah. Severely chastised for not devoting enough time to Facebook.
Yeah.
I love the movie. I like Social Network, but I just, you know, I'm not on Facebook.
Right.
I apologize to all the Facebook people out there.
That's great. Yeah, one more thing before we go, too. We're going to be doing a live webcast from the LA Auto Show on November 16, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon out in LA itself. We'll show you what's going on the floor. We're going to run into a whole lot of interesting people there. Make sure you tune in. And that wraps up the show, folks. Thanks for having tuned in.
Visit our website, outofline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Outofline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Outofline Detroit. That's all there and much more at autoline.tv.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.